We're very glad to have each of these folks participating today, all of whom are running for office except for Senator Stedman. And so we're going to ask our senator to come and give us a few remarks to start things off, and then we'll get into the candidates portion of this forum. So please welcome Senator Stedman.
Well, thank you for inviting me back to Southeast Conference. After last year, I wasn't quite sure if I'd be invited back. But I thought I'd do a little follow-up. Last year, as you recall, we had some budgetary issues. And let me pause for a minute. I'm going to address a couple of different items that you probably won't talk about here today with the panel in front of you dealing with the election. So I want to just talk about a couple of things. And one of them is that appropriation monkey business a couple of years ago that was less than clear, intentionally so. Well, we have, with I think the interest that Southeast Conference has put forth in the subject, and those that weren't here, I'm referring to the Marine Highway appropriation in a nutshell, where the welfare recipients were short of money. It would come out of the Marine Highway, to make a longer story short. But we have made some strides with the budget director and legislative finance and the finance committees on budget clarity. And we have, on that issue, had caught the attention of the OMB director last year, and of course my attention. And then during the halfway through this legislative session, I was appointed the chairman of Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, which is the committee that oversees legislative finance and the finance committees. So we have embarked on a different cultural direction than legislative finance has been on, in my opinion, the last several years, and working with clarity issues within the budget. So the elected officials and the unelected members of the public that take an interest in the fiscal position of the state could actually read the finances of the state and understand what's going on in the budgets. They're a public document, it's a public purse, and they shouldn't be put together in such a manner that they're not understandable. That's just deplorable to me. So legislative finance has come out with work with OMB on a 9-page document a couple weeks ago, followed up by another 11-page that I got the numbers backwards on pages, but some clarity on what was actually in these budgets and which years the monies were targeted, so it would be a little clearer. Those that are running for office should be able to pick these documents up and understand what they're reading, so they can prepare for the discussion with the public. And those running for governor shouldn't be beat up in the press by several, nothing about the, bad about the press, but by using different numbers at different times because nobody can figure out what the budget numbers actually are. So we're working on that clarity. And the direction, again, the cultural direction, I think, of Ledge Finance has moved to more straightforward clarity. So that and that I thank them. I was concerned that cultural issue would permeate down into the department or into the division and into the next director. And that, to me, would be intolerable. So stay tuned on that. But I do thank Southeast Conference for taking or making a note of that and paying attention to it and expressing their concern with the governor about the monkey business in Juneau and to put an end to it. So I think Southeast Conference had a big impact. And those of you that were here last year, we had some colorful language up here, rather direct on that subject matter. So with that, I'd like to switch gears a little bit. I want to touch a couple things on the district. Yesterday I was over in Valner Bay, looking at that project. For those of you that don't know where that's over on the other side of the airport on the north end of the island, Caribbean Island. That road extension has been completed. It gives access to some more timberland. It gives access to a lot of private property owners' property over there. It has and will allow easier access to private property that is not adjoining the road system. It gives the university much more flexibility in their upcoming subdivision out there. They have a bunch of waterfront property on the west side, and the Forest Service has some timber they want to remove and mental health and DNR, the state side, and the university. So everybody has interests over there, and everybody's going to come out a winner on this, and it's a very good project. Today I just came back from Shelter Cove. Shelter Cove is a multi-million dollar project. For those of you that aren't from around here, it goes into the interior of the island and over to Shelter Cove. That project has some difficulty. The contractor has been changed, not voluntarily, but has been changed, and the bonding company has stepped in. There's a new contractor, and that project is moving forward. It's going to probably take a little bit more funds to clean it up and get it done, but that is underway. As we speak, we'll have a better idea probably in this winter how much the next phase is going to cost to clean that up. But that project is underway, and that's going to open up 148 road miles to the residents and non-residents of Ketchikan, non-residents when they're here. And that is a huge expansion. These two roads are some of the only roads in the last 50 years that the state has built. My entire adult life. So when we have meetings with DOT, particularly their planners, they don't go well because they have worked their way through an oil boom of 40 years and produced virtually nothing. We have the same road miles in all our communities in Southeast as we had in the 60s. So, and I think we've got a flaw in our system that it goes beyond the governor and the commissioner, and because we have multiple governors, multiple commissioners, so we have to have some conversations and some policy and try to figure out how to fix that. And within that program, the next project is a road to Catlan Bay and Sitka. That should be bid this month. DOT has promised me on right next to a stack of Bibles. Hopefully it's not on the Quran or something, on King James's version, that it gets done this month. So we'll see. I'm hopeful. It's a project of 10, 14 million plus. It'll open up not as much as Gravina or Shelter Cove by far, but it'll open up the basin in the back of Catlan Bay. There's interest from the military on some of the benefits that ice-free deepwater fjord has next to the ocean. And we, the state, has some of the most valuable waterfront property in Southeast called Cedar Cove on the north side of Catlan Bay. And we, with the help of the senator from Washington, D.C., Lisa, adjusted the land exchange bill last year to remove that parcel out of the land exchange bill because it is some of the most valuable land in Southeast, and it almost got swapped to the Forest Service and about gave me a coronary on the spot because we had this road appropriated and designed and we were virtually a year out from heading the road down the bay. So that is a high spot that's coming hopefully this month. The fourth project is the road to Cake, and we are diligently working on that, trying to pry it loose from the grips of molasses to move that forward. That project would be a similar road is over on Valner Bay. It's going to be nothing fancy, a 14, 16-foot wide gravel connection road that will allow the residents of the communities in that area to move back and forth on top of Kupernoff Island and give Cake access to a hospital and grocery stores. And we have a hatchery that was mentioned earlier that's underway now in Cake. They're going to have a fishery in front of their community. We'll give them more opportunity to catch fish and have them delivered to processors. I'm looking forward to working with Sea Alaska, and I see their smiley attorney over there, and working with getting ice and fish processing in the community with that hatchery. It is a big deal for Central Southeast and the community of CAKE. So I'm hoping that we in the on the state side move forward with that road project and get it connected so we can move the economy forward. Those were the two main points I wanted to make today, was the roads to resources are alive and well, moving forward, and the budget skullduggery, I think a little bit of sunshine on that fungus pretty much put it in abatement for a while anyway, at least hopefully as long as I'm in the legislature. So with that, I'd like to just get off the podium, let the audience have at the questions, and as the last remaining or last standing Republican, I don't have an election this year, so they can't throw me out till next year. So you're guaranteed to have at least one Republican in the legislature, no matter what happens in this debate. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Steadman. He's going to sit there as the arbiter of facts should we run into any challenges. And we don't have a lot of time today for a lot of questions, but this is an opportunity for you to meet the region and the region to meet you. And so we really appreciate your time. And we recognize that you, too, have spent a lot of time in your communities and very engaged in the issue. So we're going to start off and allow you each 2 minutes to introduce yourself and who you are, why you're running. And we have a timekeeper over here that will let you know when you're within the 15-second line time frame. And then we'll take a couple questions to interact between the two. I do want to note for the record that there is a person in the room that is running for office that is not on the dais. And there's been some questions, well, why is the member not up there? Jesse Keel is here representing the capital city and the assembly there where he sits. And so despite the fact he's had 18 years as staffer up on the Hill, he's running for office, and the rules of engagement for running for office and being here as an elected official conflict. So he is not part of that discussion today, but we do want to recognize that the fact that he is running for that office, and he's here, and thank you for that. So we will begin here on the left and continue forward. And do each of those mics work? Because I can hand you this one if you don't have access to a good mic.
I think this works.
Go for it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Robert. My name's Jonathan Christ Tompkins. I represent District 35 in the Alaska House of Representatives, which is most of the smaller communities in Southeast Alaska. I'm from Sitka, where I was born and raised, and I'm closing out my third term in the legislature, so just shy of 6 years. And in my remaining 100 seconds, I'd like to, I guess, highlight part of what I see as sort of the philosophy of public service, or that I try to bring to the position. I'm a part of the bipartisan coalition in the House of Representatives. In my mind, that coalition, its formation, has been incredibly important to coastal Alaska, and certainly sort of how I identify. We've got a handful of Republicans, some independents, some Democrats, and it's felt like a sort of healthy way to approach the policy and lawmaking process in Juneau in the House. And if you look at the membership of who dominates the positions of influence in the House, the co-chairs of finance, the Speaker of the House, you see coastal Alaska represented incredibly well. And that filters down in terms of, sort of cutting the hemorrhaging in terms of the ferry system and funding for the ferry system, protecting the ADF&G budget, including commercial fisheries division, and actually seeing a slight increase in that this last year over year, championing mariculture and aquaculture fisheries enhancement in Alaska, legislation that does that, as well as representing those priorities in the budget process, increasing the commercial fishing revolving loan fund limits, which is incredibly important to new fishermen entering Alaska fisheries. So lots of priorities important to this region, important to our communities. I'm strongly supportive of that. The bipartisan coalition has been able to champion that, and I really hope to come back to Juneau with the coalition and continue to advance those priorities for our region.
And I'm Chris Diamond. I live in Douglas, Alaska. I'm running for House District 33, which covers downtown Juneau out to Lemon Creek, Douglas Island, Haines, Skagway, Gustavus, Clark Juan, and Excursion Inlet. I'm running as an independent candidate. I'm a fourth-generation Alaskan, raising a fifth generation of kids here in Alaska with my wife, Nona. I decided to get into this race as an independent because I've seen what the coalition has been doing the last 2 years, and I think we're on a good start. I think that we need more moderate center folks in the legislature representing the people in this state. Most of us are pretty independent, and I believe that being able to work from a center position out where you're willing to work with people across aisles and put aside that party restraint and party label is really the only way we're going to get moving forward in this state. I think this room is a great example of various people coming together and working together for the betterment of our region. And I would really hope that we can make that work in the legislature, continue a bipartisan coalition, and expand that to include more people. So I'm an organizer for the Carpenters Union. I've been doing commercial construction on and off for 23 years. I have been a small business owner. I was a florist at one point in my life. And I'm just looking to create some jobs, improve our infrastructure and transportation opportunities here in Southeast and across Alaska, and ideally get some educational opportunities out there, too, for our kids beyond typical learning. The voc ed and secondary learning like that is extremely important. So thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Dan Ortiz, and I am currently the representative, honored to be able to represent District 36 for the past 4 years, ending my second term here shortly. I think my record reflects a commitment to communication, cooperation, and representation to the constituents of my district and to the best interests of all of Alaskans. And it's a pretty good record. If you look, I've been able to cooperate and partner in the passage of HB 18. I worked closely with the Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce on that, which was the Race Classics Bill. HB 56, which is the Commercial Revolving Loan Fund, communicated and cooperated with the Young Fishermen of Alaska. They brought that issue to my attention. HB 76, we heard a lot about that today already. Worked closely with Julie Decker on that particular piece of legislation. And HB 354, Phil Doherty came to see me, said, hey, we have this issue. SARPA has this issue. Can you help us out? Listen to him. Work with him. We got the bill passed. The list continues. It's HCR 19, Native Language Preservation Bill, and SB 88, the Mental Health Trust Land Exchange. Again, working in cooperation with Senator Murkowski, Senator Stedman, the rest of the folks in my caucus, and we're able to get it done. And that's why I'm here today. I'm just honored to have the privilege to have the ability to represent District 36, and I want to continue in that, and I hope that I get the support of the voters that will allow me to do that. Thank you.
Gunashchish, thank you to the Tlingit and Haida people whose land we live on. My name is Sarah Hannon. I grew up in Anchorage before there was oil money, and we paid for good public schools with a payroll tax. I went to university as a first-generation university attendee because Alaska had a student loan program that incentivized young people having opportunities and encouraged them to return to professions in Alaska. And as a working-class family, I remember when we got that first PFD check and felt like we'd won the lottery. And we knew that that would provide us opportunities for change that we had never envisioned. I moved to Juneau over 30 years ago. My sister makes her life in Craig, Alaska. I've been in Juneau most of it. I have a sister still in Anchorage. I'm running for office after a career as a public school high school teacher. I have a number of former students that I've seen around the room. Because I feel like we made a promise to each other 40 years ago that when our oil revenue would run out, and we knew it would someday, would have a plan in place to pay for the things that we promised each other, that we would always have good public schools, that our young people would have opportunities for professional development, and that our communities would be safe and our water would be clean. And we are now facing a point where we can't pay for what our basic services demand. I want to see us tax ourselves. I think it helps Alaskans buy in to the things they want. I do not believe we can cut our way to a better Alaska, and unless you're a company, we haven't been paying our way. So I hope to have some support, and I look forward to more dialogue about the issues facing our future.
I guess I get my choice.
Which one? Perfect. I'll use this one. First of all, thank you to Southeast Conference for being here. Welcome to Ketchikan. My name is Trevor Shaw. I'm running for State House District 36. Last time I went to Southeast Conference was when it was in Wrangell. I haven't been in a few years, so it's good to be able to participate more fully. And so I'd just like to welcome everyone here. I've lived in Ketchikan basically my whole life, married to a hometown girl, Lisa Shaw. She's from here, and we look forward to being able to build a family here in Alaska and raise another generation of Alaskans. And so the reason I'm running for State House is I think the first thing we have to do, after being reliant on oil for so many years, and then as Governor Walker talked about, kind of the tank effect, the tank being empty now instead of full, that we have to figure out what the role of government needs to be. And things are simply going to look different than they were in 2004, 2006, 2008, because things have changed. The system as a whole has changed, and we have to adapt. And Alaskans are resilient. That's what we're good at. We're good at adapting and coming up with homegrown solutions to solve the problems we face. I had the honor of serving on the Ketchikan School Board for nearly 5 years, including 2 terms as the school board president. And during those times, we did face budget cuts. And during those times, we took a look at, okay, how can we continue to provide a quality education for every student every day, no matter the situation that we face? And we did it. We did it through public-private partnerships. We did it through efficiency and working with our local government to establish a local education funding formula. And those are the kind of things that Alaska needs to look at. We hear a lot about taxation. First thing I think we need to do is have fair and equitable taxation. Right now, the entire Alaska is the only state in the country that's currently not completely organized into county equivalents, boroughs here in Alaska. And so I think we need to take a look at how we're going to do things in the future, and I look forward to having that conversation. Thank you.
Kunashish Hachiyadi, thank you for being here and for allowing me to speak. My name is Richard Ween. I'm certainly one of the new people on the block. It'll be hard to introduce myself in 2 minutes. I'm running for the House seat in District 35. I call it the lost and forgotten district. I'm running because I feel that it needs a greater and more powerful voice for its representation. As I made my travels through Southeast, the PFD was a very big issue. And though for some people the PFD represents 2 tickets to Honolulu, in the district, it really represents real income and a chainsaw or tires, et cetera. And I think the spirit of the PFD needs to be restored. I feel that if SB 41, by the way, I'm a retired surgeon and physician, and I can tell you if SB 91 were a surgical case, I'd be in court for malpractice. And there are those kind of issues where we need to really get the thing done properly the first time. That's the surgical way. You can't say, oh, I forgot something, and go back in or redo something. It has to be right the first time. As far as health care goes, we know that health care is one of the driving forces on the basic budget. And as a physician and surgeon who has held many leadership roles in healthcare, including president and chief of staff of a hospital, which had multiple times the beds that all of Southeast has, I can offer a unique and powerful voice. And the other driver in the state budget, et cetera, is the K through 12. And I have an extreme interest in education. There's no reason to be the last in the state with all that money we're spending, and I definitely believe I can do something about it. Thank you. I have a lot more to say, too. No more time.
So what's the one thing, if you could accomplish in the next session, that you would like to see on your accomplishment list, and why is that so important? Go ahead.
I'd like to see a balanced budget and eliminate the uncertainty that I think has plagued Alaska's climate in terms of private sector investment, in terms of just personal life decisions, the sort of certainty that young families are looking for. There's been steps towards that the last couple of years. They've been messy. If I were sort of emperor for a day, probably would have done it a little bit differently, but recognizing that compromise is part of the process, I think they've been at least half decent, and they've gotten us in a better place. And I'd like to see us get all the way to a fully solvent and sustainable budget so we eliminate the uncertainty that will allow Alaska to hopefully have a prosperous next 50-plus years.
As I said earlier, I would like to see transportation and infrastructure needs addressed and fixed. I think that's a huge issue, and obviously the budget's a part of that, but I believe if we can do those two things in conjunction together, that we will be able to get Southeast and the rest of this state moving forward in a positive direction.
Finishing the job on the fiscal plan. The House majority was able to put forward a fully balanced fiscal plan in this last legislative session, which included HB 26. We ended up adopting only the HB 26 portion of that plan, and we still have uncertainty out there, as Representative Christ-Tompkins just spoke about. We continue to have about a $700 million deficit, and in the meantime, in the last 6 years, we burned through $14 billion in savings, and we just can't continue to do that. So I would feel best about finishing the job on a full fiscal plan.
More than a balanced budget, a fiscal plan that allows us to grow a future where we see better 40 years down the road, where we don't see continued cuts and things like our university and our ferry system at risk annually to patching the budget year to year. So balancing the budget, a fiscal plan, and a future growth plan, how we all move forward together.
So it's kind of a combination of all of the above, because I think one of the biggest mistakes the legislature and the current governor's made is not knowing what we're working towards. Because the government we had before the oil crash is gone, and it needs to completely go away. We need to figure out what Alaska needs to look like moving forward. We need to look at efficiency, sustainability, and an opportunity for Alaska. We have to sit down and have those hard conversations. We can't continue to throw money at an old problem. It just doesn't work. And make no mistake, the House coalition has put together a balanced budget on the backs of hardworking Alaskans through immense tax increases and cuts to the permanent fund dividend without any plan on how to spend that money and actually change government in a way that's meaningful and sustainable. And so the first thing we have to do is sit down and have a conversation about a strategic plan for Alaska that actually works.
Well, you're never going to balance a budget unless some sacred cows get slain and turned into barbecue sacred burgers. The important thing is that what is a sacred cow? That's an issue more related to votes than utility. And there are so many issues within the budget which are not related to utility but are related to other things such as votes. And let me tell you that that relates to K through 12. It relates to health care. It relates to just about all the many issues, and you're not going to jumpstart this economy unless you recognize that it's like places like the Southeast Conference and business that feeds all of this, and this is what needs to be supported, and we cannot continue to hamper business. Vote no on Prop 1.
Which is the next question. The next question relates to Proposition number 1. Yeah. We've heard a lot about the potential costs to municipalities, public health, projects, small business. Where do you stand on Proposition 1, and how should the state pay for those costs related to the permitting and enforcement? And we are hopeful that the answers are at 1 minute.
I'm still sorting it out. I was on the Fisheries Committee where HB 199, which is sort of the precursor to the ballot initiative, was heard. I like aspects, the public comment and notice part, but I have concerns that other aspects of the initiative go too far, effectively impede what I think are straightforward permitting processes. I haven't quite analyzed the components the Supreme Court struck out of the initiative. So for now, kind of like the marijuana initiative 4 years ago, try not to insert myself too closely into the fray.
Yeah, I'll be voting no on Prop 1. I believe that a big blanket initiative like that that tries to regulate way too much of our state without any clear defined mechanisms for our industries to operate is going to hamper us. Let's look at Title 16 and look for areas where we can improve on areas that we might be lacking, but I don't see any indication that this initiative is necessary. I believe it should be a legislative process to begin with. So.
Well, certainly my record in the legislature has been one in support of the fishing industry and the importance of the fishing industry to District 36's economy. With that said, I do have concerns about Proposition number 1. I do believe that it's perhaps a bit of an overreach in this situation. And I think issues that are out there in terms of habitat protection, and there are, make no mistake, there are, I think we can do it with a more surgical knife than this particular initiative.
I'm very pleased that Alaska has an initiative process because it gives people the attention to bring issues to politicians that may have not been able to get their attention. With that said, I'm going to vote yes, knowing full well this issue is not going to be resolved the day after the election, win or lose. There are a lot of issues surrounding ballot measure 1 that the public wants addressed. Public notification, development projects like Pebble, with Alaskans having a right to say whether it goes forward or not. And so I understand full well that in this audience, it's not a popular answer, but remember, I'm the gal who said I'm for an income tax, so I'm not afraid of telling you what I think. And I know that the day after the election, the issues around what led us to Prop 1 are going to write back before the legislature because it's not ended there. It's up to the citizens to feel confident that we are governing our water and air for our long-term health.
On the flip side, no, 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 no. It's bad news. I have never seen a situation where overregulation is the solution to a problem. It's just that simple. And so in business, in the business that I work in, we do a lot of working with DNR, Department of Environmental Conservation, to make sure that we continue to stay on top of the robust permitting process that this state has and environmental compliance, and that's how it should be. We have a good system in place, and as we've heard from several people on this stage, we have one of the best in the world, and if we just push business out because of what I believe to be stonewalling and nothing more than a distraction, they're going to go other places where there aren't those environmental protections. And so I think it's something that needs to be resolved by the legislature. There are pieces that need to be talked about, and I think that needs to be done as a part of the bigger strategic plan for Alaska's future.
I have to say, if I get elected, I'm going to have to remember that DNR doesn't mean do not resuscitate. Prop 1 is a presumptive issue. And in America, you are innocent until proven guilty. With Prop 1, I'm afraid you are guilty if you are a stream until proven innocent, and hence that is the major problem. And I certainly do not believe that fish and game in the state of Alaska does not stand with salmon. And the name just even makes you take a position, and it's crafted that way. And so there's no particular reason to put this initiative forward, because it really wasn't written as well as it could be if they wanted to achieve their goal. Thank you.
You know, Southeast Conference is leading the AMHS reform project. You heard the senator speak of the lack of road building that's occurred in the region. Give us the one-minute stance on transportation. What are you going to solve? What are you going to do?
I've been following Southeast Conference's efforts and have a lot of respect and admiration for the members of the Southeast region, as well as the technical consultants and the staff at DOT that have been pushing forward this process. I'm broadly supportive of the principles identified through that process. I'd like to see it continue. I'd like to see the legislature take action on the legislation coming forward to the legislature. We've got an old system. I think this sort of comprehensive structural review of what the Alaska Marine Highway system is going to look like for the next 50 years is hugely important. So I really like the direction of the ferry system review. I really appreciate Southeast Conference's efforts, and I want to support it going forward.
Yeah, and I would agree. I think that the plan put forward with this empowered board to change the way we're operating so that we have schedules and a forward funding of our services are going to be paramount to the survival of our transportation system here in Southeast. The Marine Highway, we have got to make sure that it's funded, and we've got to make sure that it's operating properly. So I believe that's a huge step forward for us. I also believe that there's areas that we'll be able to build roads, and that we need to look at building roads to ensure that areas where the ferry are not serving us, that we can make up for those spots that the ferry is not able to fulfill, and help us transport our commerce across the state and down south.
Yes, I'm very much in support of the efforts put forward by Southeast Conference on this particular issue. The initial bill was introduced at the end of the last session. It didn't get much airtime. However, I look forward to the revised version of that bill so that the legislature can give it its due consideration. Because make no mistake, we do need to reform and change the way that the Marine Highway system is operated. It's so important to the economies of my district and throughout Southeast Alaska and throughout coastal Alaska. We need to get it right, and we need to put in place the parameters so that we have longevity to the system. It's critical, and again, I applaud the efforts put forward so far by Southeast Conference.
Everyone on the coast of Alaska understands the importance of the marine highways. We will never have enough roads in Alaska to transport Alaskans along our rugged coastline. My concerns about reforms really are about making sure that we protect cost shifting so that our smallest communities are not paying an undue burden, because they are some of the least profitable runs. And when we look at some of that tariffing structure in the plan, it seems at first glance that it's everybody paying an equal share, but some of our poorest, smallest communities will never be able to afford the regular transportation that is so vital for their existence. So I want to make sure that we don't get caught up of just always balancing the books and everyone paying their share, because certainly parts of Southeast Alaska are going to need more assistance, or it's just cost shifting.
I'm very supportive of the AMHS reform project that Southeast Conference is leading. I think it's a good example of the ingenuity of Alaskans public-private partnership coming together to figure out a solution that's centered around the stakeholders of the system. And I think that's the most important part of this process, is that the future of AMHS should not be solely determined by a rail belt legislature. And so that's what's important to all of Southeast, all of the coastal communities. House Bill 412 that got introduced to make that transition, of course, like it's been said by Representative Ortiz, didn't get as much airtime as it should. There were other issues that were dominating the end of the session, but that's something we need to take a good hard look at, and it's all part of coming together and figuring out what works best for our coastal communities and for the system's longevity.
In District 35, the Alaska Marine Highway is our highway, and that's the end of that. And it has to be supported. I support the initiative, but that's not enough. The important thing is, if I get into the legislature, I'm going to keep them on task and try to make them happen, and have it be transparent and let everybody in Southeast know what the heck is going on. As far as roads go, I don't know much. There are only 14 miles of them in Sitka. But the important thing is that the highway needs to serve everyone that it's able to within Southeast. And the rail belt needs to understand that this is a state. I would hate to have to sponsor a secession initiative. Then we could apply for and declare war on the United States. It was like the mouse that roared, and get reparations or something.
So just a reminder that the polls close at 3:30, so that's our hour is evaporating. The final moments, minutes. For each of you. Yes.
We'll really appreciate the opportunity for this forum, and thanks to Southeast Conference for convening this. I think maybe to summarize a lot of the issues as discussed, this is a completely historic sort of inflection point in Alaska history, these last couple of years and really these next couple of years. My first year in the legislature was the first year in a while that the legislature was running a budget deficit. It was red ink, not black ink, and it's been that way ever since. So the whole sort of universe of decisions in front of us has been, what is the least worst decision for sort of the best possible future? And it's sort of unpleasant to navigate that, but ultimately it's important to navigate that, and I'm really committed to trying to make those decisions as best as possible going forward. Almost always they're not pleasant decisions, but I am really, really committed to Alaska that I can, you know, want to live in, want to invest in, and be a part of in 20, 30, 40 years. So it's that long time horizon and the long-term future of the state that's hugely important to me. And so want to sort of continue some of the momentum we've had on that front the last couple of years and get the job done the next few years.
So my hope is that we can continue the work that the 30th legislature was doing, we can finish up the fiscal plan, and we can start investing in Southeast again and across this state. You know, we need to not be scared to take some of the steps that those that settled this state took. You know, I think that everybody in this room has been really inspiring to watch the last day and a half, the way everybody works together and the way you've all put your common interest towards the betterment of this region. I really hope that I can be a part of that in the legislature so that all of you are successful and that my children have a state to be proud of when they're adults, and that got me again, dang it. So that my kids and my grandkids, you know, will want to live here and settle Alaska and call this their home as well. So thank you for your support and attention.
It's about communication, cooperation, representation in a nonpartisan fashion. That's what it's about. My record's clear. I think that there's so many of you out here that I've made relationships with, not just in the legislature, but in my years living in Ketchikan prior to that, which was over 50 years. You know what I'm about. My record's clear. I ask that you support that record in this next election. Thanks.
I think I bring some skills that the Alaska legislature needs. After 22 years in a public high school classroom, I can work with anybody, and I'm not afraid of much, except for kindergartners. They're terrifying. I married a fish guy, and he threatened that we were going to get another wooden troller, and I decided that I'd run for office and make sure there wasn't a dime or a minute for me to ever be on the boat as a deckhand again. And I'll bring that hard work to your deck, because I can scrape a bottom and I can clean a fish while puking over the side, because I'm not very seaworthy. But I do know that what it takes is the ability to work with anybody and find solutions. And that's what you do as a teacher, and I'd like to bring that skill set to the legislature.
I hope I get two again. Thank you, Sarah. It's important to remember that whatever the state legislature does, it's important to remember the cause and effect. And I've been in local government. I've been in business. I've worked in other businesses. I've even worked for the state. I worked for the Marine Highway for a while. So it's important to remember the cause and effect. And I've seen the effects of what the state has done over the last 4 years, and I don't think it's good enough. I think Alaska deserves better. I think Alaska deserves a plan that puts us on a path for a bright future instead of just talking about, okay, if we spend this money, we'll get there, or if we tax this person, we'll get there. So I think the conversation has to be comprehensive about, okay, what do we want everything to look like when we're done? What is Alaska going to look like for the next forever? I mean, we hear conversations all the time about the decisions we make today will affect tomorrow. Well, it's time we make decisions that build a forever for Alaska, and so that's what I stand for, and that's what I hope to do.
My life has been dedicated to solving problems, and I have been trained to take complex information, synthesize it, and develop real solutions that have consequences. And that's the key. When you are trained to know that the things that you do will have effects and that you have to be responsible for them, that you cannot walk away from them, that is an important aspect that can be brought to the table. I bring to the table as well healthcare knowledge, which can definitely help craft the current issues that are related to Medicaid and other healthcare problems and needs that are within this community. I also feel that we are at a crossroad in this state. We are first and last in the wrong things, and you really need to, it's kind of like the 12-step program. You really have to get up there, and we heard it today, but it's more than just mentioning that there are these problems. You really have to get out there and do something. I am persistent, and I am a big voice, and I will be relentless. Thank you.
Senator Stedman, we'd like to offer you twice as much time. We have 2 minutes left. Any closing thoughts, advice, counsel?
Yes, just as a subject that hasn't been brought up. The permanent fund, roughly about $65 billion, about $15 billion of that is open for appropriations to the legislature. 2 years ago, the Democrats in the House wanted to spend $9.5 billion of it. This year, some of the Republicans in the Senate wanted to spend about $10 billion of it. To me, that's fire alarm bell time. So we need to take that earnings reserve, which is a spendable portion of the permanent fund, and put it in the corpus and lock it up, or the legislature will spend it. And that is a clear and present danger. I mean, here within 2 years, both parties were talking about it in public and in private. And it's unacceptable to spend $14 billion in savings and then loot the earnings reserve. So you'll see legislative initiatives this year to roll that into the permanent fund. It will take the vote of the public to do that and to lock it up, and we'll have a conversation of the dividends at the same time, how much the dividend should be in the Constitution, out of the Constitution, or in the percentage. But one of the biggest risks we face isn't a budget deficit of one or two more years, is that the legislature will liquidate the earnings reserve of the permanent fund. So we will have those discussions this fall with the communities and the people, but I urge all of you to express your opinion to your elected officials, particularly this winter after when they go to Juneau. Thank you.
Thank you all. And, you know, all of us in the room, we don't all agree on everything, but we certainly appreciate a good, honest answer, and we appreciate you taking the time to interact with us and giving us an opportunity to know who you are and a little bit more about where you're coming from and where you want to lead us. And I hope that you can stay and be engaged with some of the membership as we get ready to take a break and the rest of the day. Our break is sponsored by the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation. We thank you all for that. Would you give a round of applause for our leaders here? Thank you.